And joining us now is Greg Stanwood, staff writer for Purple Row, which is the SB Nation's Rockies fan site. Greg, how are you feeling?
I'm doing all right, considering the circumstances.
So this is being pre-recorded on Tuesday night, hours after Dexter Fowler and a player to be named later was traded to the Astros for Jordan Lyles and Brandon Barnes. So I guess just to kick it off, what are your impressions of this trade?
Personally, I'm not a huge fan, obviously. I'm not quite so upset, I think, as some other people in the Rockies fan base are right now. I mean, just with having so little time to really think over exactly what impression I would have right now. I mean, quality-wise, I don't know that on the surface, I don't know that it makes the Rockies a better team. I definitely like the trade from your side. Although my understanding, I'm not super familiar with your farm system, but my understanding is you actually have quite a bit of outfield depth. Is that right?
Not really. That's okay. Why they're kind of they've been, you know, the fans on our site watch, you know, a lot of them want Shinsu Chu.
And who doesn't?
Exactly. And you know, as you just saw, the Astros did trade for Dexter Fowler. So I mean, we have George Springer coming. George Springer will be in the starting lineup in 2014, but it's probably not coming until after May or June when Super 2 status is passed. And you know, past that, there's a couple guys, but they're not ready to come up. And there's a lot of, you know, we've got LJ Hose and Robbie Grossman, but those aren't, if they're a Dexter Fowler type of player, I mean, that's kind of what their ceiling is at this point. They're nice pieces and they're quality guys, but they're not going to really blow your socks off.
So it's depth, but it's not ready to make a difference for you.
Right. They're not impact players. I mean, they're guys that you can throw out there and feel okay about, I guess you could say. Okay. And there's still some question marks surrounding some of those guys as well, too. But to get Dexter Fowler, I mean, that's a big, like you said, big win for the Astros as far as filling a need, because right field was one of the positions they were looking to fill this offseason. So what do Astro fans need to know about Dexter Fowler?
I mean, when it comes to talking about any Rockies player, the first place people tend to look is home road splits. And, you know, just as sort of my default response to that is I wouldn't pay too much attention to those. I think a lot of those numbers are the result of just having to move back and forth between altitude and not so many times over the course of the season. A lot of these players do even out once they move to other places. So, I mean, if people are worried about any of that stuff, I would say you want to look elsewhere. In terms of his skills, defensively, the metrics aren't big fans of him. He's probably better than his reputation is going to be just looking at the numbers. I don't think he's necessarily a poor outfielder, but at the same time, he's probably not going to overwhelm you either. I mean, he has the speed. He has a very interesting speed tool in general. So he's one of those guys in the outfield who is capable of demonstrating a wide range of capabilities, but he's also not going to, you know, totally blow you away with them. The same is true on the base paths as well. He's not really a base stealer type of speed guy, but he will go first to third or score from second as well as anybody. You know, he's one of those guys that you could describe as fast but not quick, I suppose, would be the adage to use. So that's definitely one of his tools. He's developed into a pretty good on-base guy. Does strike out a fair amount, but balances it out with having decent on-base percentage skills. So he's a fairly well-rounded guy. Good leadoff hitter. Probably not necessarily the exact mold that like the traditional leadoff hitter would require, but he can fill that position pretty well. Indeed, the biggest complaint that the Rockies fan base has had so far about the trade is that it leaves the Rockies without any good fits for the leadoff spot in their lineup. That's sort of the thing that we're going to miss most about having him there.
Yeah, so I mean, that's a little curious. So, I mean, why do you think O'Dowd made this trade? I mean, he did call Fowler a lollygagger, correct?
I don't think he called him a lollygagger. I think I'm pretty sure that that was just an in-joke that we came up with about him. But what you're referring to in terms of O'Dowd's thoughts on him is that there was an interview a couple weeks ago where he basically foreshadowed that they were no longer especially high on Dexter Fowler. And Troy Rank, our Denver Post beat writer, tweeted today something about how the Rockies really kind of lost confidence in him in the last 6 weeks of the season. He was one of many Rockies players who in the second half of the season had a bunch of walking injuries. And, you know, who knows how much of that's really his fault, how much is attributable to his own health or his own response to, you know, just difficulties staying healthy. But at the same time, I think it damaged their confidence in him. So the team was obviously down on him. Now, as for why they would trade him, our offseason budget was sort of in the neighborhood of $10 million to spend. And ditching Fowler's contract adds another $7 million onto that number. So it lets us be a little bit more aggressive in other areas. I think most of us would have preferred a different return than this. So I think that's where most of the negative feedback comes from. But if this ends up being a precursor to something more significant than we expected, who knows? But all these things about how we're, you know, nearing a two-year deal with Justin Morneau, now that's not really news at this point. We've been tied to him for a couple weeks now, and I think that was probably in the cards regardless of whether we traded him or not. So the real kicker is going to be, do we now have the opportunity to go pursue somebody else in addition to Justin Morneau, who we can consider sort of an impact addition to the team? Because obviously Morneau is going to be the Helton replacement, right? He's going to be sort of that one-to-one replacement. And so does this mean now that we can make a better play for an improvement in the rotation at second base, an outfielder to replace Fowler? You know, all of these things are possibilities at this point. But until that happens, from our perspective, it looks pretty bleak.
So who's going to fill in his role as center fielder? Is that going to be like Carlos Gonzalez, or is there another outfielder?
Well, we have a lot of outfielders that can play center. Carlos Gonzalez is probably going to be the team's first choice. They said earlier in the offseason that they were confident that were the situation this was sort of another foreshadowing of a Fowler trade. They mentioned they were confident that given the right situation, Gonzalez could make the move back to center. So I think that's definitely a possibility. If for some reason he doesn't, we have Corey Dickerson and Charlie Blackman, both of whom are sort of fourth outfielder types that both can play center. Probably not as well as Gonzalez could, but they are not out of the picture either. I would assume right now, as it stands, one of those two is going to be starting in either left or center until we sort of get a better picture on what we're going to be doing. I mean, they're both lefties. They might platoon with Brandon Barnes, but I think in terms of center, we're probably going to see Gonzalez make the move. And if not, we do have plenty of other options.
Yeah. That was actually be my question about what handedness they were. Cause Barnes is a right-handed yeah. hitter, and he's probably a guy that you want to deploy in a platoon mm-hmm. situation. If you're going to deploy him at all as a starter, because he's, you see his overall line, but then you go to his splits and you can see he hits left-handed pitching really well. It's kind of interesting about him. He can play center field. He can play all three positions. My reaction to the trade was that I don't get to make any more gifts of Brandon Barnes. I mean, you just go look on our site. There's a couple posts about Brandon Barnes and how awesome he is, and just gifts litter our site of Brandon Barnes plays. He is mostly though like a fourth, fifth outfielder type of guy, and a guy that you want to have in a platoon situation. I mean, you can see his defensive value just looking at his WAR. I mean, he had an awful hitting line, but he still put up like a 1 WAR for the Astros according to Fangraphs last year. And I think even Baseball Reference likes him even more. So I think, you know, Barnes, I know the return's not sexy, and it could fall on its face pretty bad, but Barnes, I think, in that environment, deployed correctly, could thrive. He's been a guy that we all thought it was going to be outfield death, and he's played, and he played well last year, and he provided some positive value. Mm-hmm. So he's one of those guys that kind of, you know, they're very scrappy, and they're fun to root for just because of some of the plays that he makes, and he's a great character guy as well. So
Purple Row doesn't usually tend to be a fan of the scrappy players.
Yeah, it's not even shtick, and I've always kind of rooted for a little bit of the underdog. So, but he's definitely a fun player to watch.
That's good. Right-handed outfield depth was one of the weaknesses going into sort of this offseason. One of the smaller pieces of the picture that I've sort of been hyping for our offseason plan is just a right-handed bat off the bench. And I'm not really sure that Brandon Barnes fits exactly the bat I was imagining, for obvious reasons, but at the same time, he does have a fit because we didn't have an obvious replacement for him. We had we have two right-handed outfielders we protected from the Rule 5 draft this year, but neither of them really projected to make the team. We were going to end up the bench was one of the weakest parts of our team last year, and when you have a core as high a ceiling as the core that we have. We lose them frequently to injury. You know, all four we had four true impact players in the lineup last year in Kadire, Gonzalez, Tulowitzki, and Fowler, and all of them spent at least about 4 weeks out of the lineup because of injuries throughout the season. And when you don't have a second tier of sort of supporting players to really fill that void, not all the way to the peak value that you get from your starters, but not even at sort of a tangential level, you end up with a pretty ugly looking team being fielded out there for a few weeks every year. And so that's been one of the areas that I've been looking to improve. So I think a platoon, depending on what we do here, might be in the cards. I think that we'll probably see him make the team and probably see him sort of serve as sort of a reverse mirror image of our lefty guys.
Well, yeah, defensive replacement. Well, it sounds like you have a couple defensive replacements there. So,
couple replacements who don't do anything right, actually. So, yeah. it was pretty bad. Yeah, I assume, again, not having looked into this too closely, that Barnes is probably going to pretty quickly become the best outfield defender that we have in our sort of fourth outfielder scope.
Right.
And so, I could see him serving as a defensive guy. At the same time, that's going to be more important now because one of the things that we were looking for was the chance to sign an outfielder to move Michael Kadire out of right field to first base. And now that we've signed Justin Morneau, we're probably going to be seeing Kadire in right field at least two out of every 3 days, depending on how often they decide to play Morneau. That's not necessarily inspiring either. So having another righty guy to sort of fit into a variety of replacement roles is definitely. As unhappy as we might be about Barnes' upside in relationship to Fowler, at the very least, they properly identified a player type that we didn't have. Right.
I guess it's kind of the silver lining. Yeah.
Yeah. So we got somebody who has a use in our sort of, our sort of systematic layout there, which I guess is one silver lining that we can pick here. Yeah.
Yeah. Going back to kind of the defensive numbers there, it's kind of interesting because I think I've heard grumblings before that Coors, and you kind of mentioned this, that your eyes and the reputation of Fowler probably doesn't necessarily play up to his advanced defensive numbers. I mean, what kind of effect have you seen Coors Field have on advanced metrics?
Defensively, the reputation seems to be that they don't like Coors Field. But at the same time, it's just very strange all around. They tend to undervalue sort of the middle range players, players who are decent defenders, look like poor defenders, but players who are great defenders still look like great defenders. I mean, it's funny. Carlos Gonzalez won the Golden Glove 2 years ago with a season where he had absolutely terrible defensive metrics, and then came back this season and was amazing defensively and won again. So, you know, it's sort of inconsistent. It's hard to tell exactly. And I mean, as you probably know, defensive metrics in and of themselves are probably an area in sort of the discourse that need a little bit of reflection, need some improvement. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, like I said, the best impression I can give you of Fowler's defense is that he's not a butcher. He's got enough speed to cover a great deal of distance. He's going to cover a lot of space out there, but at the same time, he's not going to be the guy who is making, you know, web gems every day, right? He's capable of it, but he's not a wizard. So, I mean, I would say my best impression is that he's probably adequate, and you don't need to worry about him. I don't have all the defensive numbers off the top of my head, but if they look poor, they're probably closer to average than poor in terms of what you can expect in a defensive performance.
Okay. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the Astros kind of deploy him, because, you know, we do have George Springer come up, and he is a center fielder that's supposed to be defensively sound. So Minute Maid Park has got a huge center field, so there's a lot of ground that he's going to need to cover. So,
well, he's certainly used to that, obviously. Mm-hmm. Coors has a gigantic outfield as well. Right. So, I mean, space is definitely not a concern for, mm-hmm. I mean, he definitely has the range to play a decent center field.
Okay. Do you have you kind of have any guesses or any kind of inkling about who the player to be named later could be?
Not really. I mean, at this stage, they pull the player to be named later when I assume that they're waiting until after the Rule 5 draft is done, to see if whomever they were looking at is still in the system and hasn't been run off somewhere. Yeah. Right. So it could be a minor league player. At the same time, it wouldn't surprise me if it ends up being one of our sort of fringy bench guys. I would hope that this is not a player of significant prospect value, as you probably might imagine. Right. So I really couldn't tell you. I think there are a bunch of possibilities. It would depend on what sort of players you're looking for to stack your system's depth, if you will. So, I mean, if you're looking for something specifically, I might have some names for you. But at the same time, I don't know if there's anybody in the system that I can just pinpoint as sort of being an obvious target for a player to be named later in a trade.
Yeah, that's always, and we've learned trying to guess Jeff Luno's moves and acquisitions has just been an exercise in futility. So yeah, no, I was just kind of looking for like maybe a general type of player. So that's it gave me what I was looking for. I just had a question. I can't remember what it was. This is why I write stuff down.
Well, I can say that I just on a whim before we did this, I threw up a little post in the Purple Row thread asking if my readers had any questions for you, and I got responses that include, please tell him to stop giggling. did Dan O'Dowd call a mulligan? Tell him to be nice. Yeah, so the one question that I did receive here is, do you believe that Fowler will be in an Astros uniform in 2015?
He's signed through 2015, correct?
His contract ends after 14, but he's not going to have enough service time to be a free agent. So you'll get him for an arbitration year after that.
I mean, he fits exactly the Jeff Luno mold. I mean, we talk about on-base percentage, and I think one of our writers threw up that he had like the third highest on-base percentage behind Shin-Soo Choo. And I know another, I think like a Mets blogger said that he was like Shin-Soo Choo light. So he certainly fits the mold. It's just interesting talking about the advanced metrics for Coors Field, because the Astros just did hire Colin Weirs from Baseball Prospectus, and he kind of has a different view about advanced defensive metrics. So, I mean, there could be, I don't know how involved he is in this trade, but there could be some play there that they think that he's better than what the numbers have indicated at Coors Field, and that he can handle Minute Maid Park just fine, and any other part for that matter. I think also to your point about people being worried about the home road splits as far as getting away from Coors Field, and I think a perfect example of that is Matt Holliday. I mean, that was kind of some of the discourse when Matt Holliday left the Rockies, is that, oh, he's not going to be the same hitter he was because he hit in Coors Field, and he's been, a pretty good hitter still.
Yeah, of course, at first everybody had their own little confirmation of bias about it, because he went to Oakland first and was not very good. But that's definitely an excellent example.
To the question about if he'll be an Astros junior for 2015, I think yes, he will be. I mean, he's going to have a really bad season, but like I said, he's got a high walk percentage. He's a good base runner defensively. It sounds like he's going to be average to maybe slightly above average. He's something that the Astros don't have. I think our highest player last year in 2013 was Jason Castro with like a 4 mm-hmm. WAR. And everyone else was below 2 WAR. So even if he's a 2.2 WAR player that he was last year, that's an upgrade over almost everybody on this team.
I also hear that Fowler is now the highest paid player.
Yes, he is. Yeah, Wandy Rodriguez was our highest paid player. And he was pitching for the Pirates.
Mm.
The Astros, if you look at the final numbers, the Astros paid out like $15 million last year in salaries to players after trades and everything. So, yeah.
Yeah, we know what that's like, too. We paid Mike Hampton quite a lot of money for about 6 years after he left the team. So.
Yeah. So, were there any prospects that you were looking at? I don't know how familiar you are with the Astros system, but they've become one of the better systems in the league. Was there a player that maybe you were hoping for if the Astros were going to make a trade?
Not really. I mean, I'm not the person to ask about that. I kind of have a reputation among Purple Row commenters for really hating trade speculation. I feel uncomfortable with it just because we don't have access to the information of who's available, under what circumstances, and obviously our perceptions of how valuable a player may be are going to differ compared to what the team thinks, to what other teams think, and other teams compared to other teams. I mean, it's just there's so many factors. So, there's not any single name that I'm really looking for. I mean, like I said, it's possible that losing that $7 million and adding it to our budget is going to open up room for us to make an improvement. In addition to this, I think a big part of this early initial reception, besides just sort of the standard knee jerk instantaneous reactions that you get, is just that we valued Fowler higher than this. And, it's possible for all we know that this was the best offer we got,
Right.
Maybe everyone knew we were going to trade him. They knew that this was part of our plan, and as a result, the market sort of fell off a little bit. At the same time, Fowler had a pretty good year last year, so we're not exactly selling low. And
right.
Yep. I think that given the right circumstances, we probably could have gotten something a little bit more impactful in the short term than this. At the same time, I can't say that with any authority, right? So,
right.
Really, and part of it is just that everybody, Fowler's a very popular player. Everyone loves him a lot. So there's a lot of emotional resonance sort of stacked up in losing a player like this. It's the first time we've really, at least since 2011 with Chris Iannetta, who was really popular over at Purple Row. But even beyond that, this might even reach back to Matt Holliday in terms of being one of the bigger just individual losses to like the idealized image the fans have of the team that we've experienced in quite some time. So obviously, even if we had acquired something of a greater value, we probably would still be fairly upset. So. Right.
Well, and if you look at the value that, just what at the current state of the players, Jordan Lyles and Brandon Barnes, especially if there's a player to be named later that's coming down the road as well, it's not a very good trade as a knee-jerk reaction. I mean, Lyles, posted a 0.4 WAR, and he's had ERAs over, you know, five every year he's been in the league.
Yeah.
So it doesn't look good from that. And, you know, Brandon Barnes, as we've discussed, he's a fourth or fifth outfielder at best, or, you know, platoon guy. So it doesn't from the Rockies' perspective, I can definitely see why you're disappointed, and the fans are disappointed.
We haven't really talked much about Lyles. Obviously, the team sees some value in him being so young.
Both these guys were got into the Astros system before Jeff Lynn was here, long before he got in, before he took over. So these aren't even Jeff Lynn type of guys. Jordan Lyles is he'll be 23 next year. He broke into the big leagues at 20, and he was rushed through a system that was pretty much dead last. Right. In all of baseball. So he was rushed a little bit, and that's kind of been some of the discourse.
He's being compared to Tyler Chatwood, who was rushed through the Angel system before being traded to us in 2011 offseason. Mm-hmm. He had his breakout year last year. He's probably going to be our third starter next year, Chatwood. Mm-hmm. And basically the same age bracket. Chatwood had a little bit less major league experience. So, I mean, really, I'm not sure what they're going to do with Lyles. There is a possibility that he doesn't make the team right off the bat. He is entering a competition for sort of our fifth spot among, you know, five or six players that are all sort of in the same boat of sort of a varying amount of major league experience, but not a lot of success. This is Drew Pomeranz. This is Christian Friedrich. These sort of players that are sort of in that same boat.
Right.
Go ahead.
I think what you got to like about him is that he does have a higher than normal ground ball percentage.
Well, that's what they're saying, but I'm not sure that's the case.
It still needs to be determined. But I think one of the things too is that he had Doug Brokale as a pitching coach, and many Astros fans weren't very high on Doug Brokale, former relief pitcher. Just listening to some of his post game comments and some of the other things that we heard, I think it could be good for him getting into a different system and kind of a different pitching coach. So
yeah, I mean they're definitely going to give him sort of the Rockies aim low in the zone sort of boot camp, I'm sure, because I mean we really basically you need to be able to get balls on the ground to survive. Now the horror stat that everyone's throwing out right now is that, at least in his major league career, Lyles actually has a higher fly ball percentage than Jeremy Guthrie did. And Guthrie turned out to be a complete disaster for us. And so, obviously, how specifically relevant that's going to end up being, maybe he'll be able to adapt. Maybe he'll be able to change up his game. As it stands right now, he definitely doesn't profile perfectly, at the very least, to be a Rockies pitcher. So. Right. That's not to say that he's going to bomb quite so hard as Guthrie did. At the same time, I can see why it's hard for people to get excited about that because, I mean, when we look for ground ballers, we have some pretty high standards about what constitutes a ground baller. You have to be, that's why so many of our pitchers are true sinker types, you know, Aaron Cook-esque guys that, throw 80% sinkers. And I mean, I hear that Lyles has quite a large pitch repertoire.
Mm-hmm. He that was the thing for him was that he had mound presence and pitchability, and you know he would make the major leagues at the age of 20, or he was shooting for that, or he'd be in his early 20s, he was going to make the major leagues, and he did that. Now he just kind of has stalled at the major league level the last 2.5 years, so he's for whatever reason that might be. Last year, it seemed like he'd have like a first good four innings, and then the fifth inning, the wheels would just fall off on him. And you kind of see that in his hit numbers, and, you know, hits per nine, and his left on base percentage, where the left on base percentage in particular is well below league average.
It's kind of funny. I was just kind of racking my brain thinking about pitchers that are similar to that we've had recently. We have had our share of inconsistent pitchers. You know, Drew Pomeranz is a great example. He hasn't reached the point where he's able to last stably over what we would expect from a starting pitcher. Juan Nicasio is another example. But these guys are inconsistent in different ways. And I honestly think this sort of the amusing comp that Rockies fans might be familiar with in terms of what you're describing is Alex White, who you are familiar with.
Well, sort of. Right. He was out of last year, but he got injured.
You're familiar with who he is.
Yeah.
Not so much his pitching style, but so that's of course good to know. Like I said, I mean, it's both of these players are entering a system that has competition for them in terms of making the team. I don't know that either is a shoe-in. At the same time, they have just as good an opportunity to make the team as any of the other guys. So, I mean, I Barnes in particular, with just being a right-handed hitter, is going to make him a good fit for trying to find him a platoon or a fourth outfielder type spot for sure. And then as for Lyles, you know, that's probably going to be sort of a determined in spring training type of thing. Is he going to adapt to the Rockies philosophy quickly and maybe slide into that spot, or is he going to need a little bit more attention before we really give him a shot? So,
What about Fowler's injury history? Is that something that Astro fans should be concerned with?
Well, not compared to some of the other Rockies names like Troy Tulowitzki or what have you. You know, I wouldn't say he's injury prone, especially since he's not really known as a, I mean, he's not really like the slam into the wall, gung ho type of guy. I think he actually might've had at least one injury involving the wall of the outfield. I can't remember. That was a couple of years ago, but, I'm not particularly concerned about his health. The only thing that I would say you would really be worried about is the fact that apparently our front office is using his health as sort of one of the reasons that they sort of lost faith in him. You know, is it possible that they saw something about him in the last 6 weeks of the season as he was trying to heal that they didn't like? It's possible. But at the same time, I don't know really what specifically they would be talking about in that regard, because it's not like he's the kind of guy who is just constantly, I mean, he's injured, comes back for a month, and then is back on the DL, right? It's not quite that simple. So I would say I'm certainly not guaranteeing any health for him, but if it wouldn't surprise me if he's perfectly normal in terms of his health status for you.
Right. Well, and I'm just looking at his numbers. I mean, he does have over, you know, 500 plate appearances last year. He just missed it by 8. But the thing that sticks out is the games played, where his high is 143 and only had 119 last year. But it's interesting. He still has that many plate appearances. But to miss that many games is also quite interesting as well.
Yeah, I mean, he'd rack up plate appearances just by leading off. I mean, that's always where he was in the lineup. So that's certainly a part of it. And I think, I can't remember the exact circumstances. We had to deal with so many injuries at the end of the year last year, but at the very least he was, even when he was hurt, like, I mean, he hurt himself in sort of the second half of the season, sort of the August, September period, and was never actually put on the DL because of the roster expansion. So he was still sort of pinch hitting on occasion.
Right.
I would have to look at the game log to see exactly what that looks like.
And I have it up here from September 16th to September 21st. He played in six games and had one plate appearance. It's each.
So term. Yeah, those were basically all just pinch hit type things. Yeah, it was kind of the same with Gonzalez, except he was the best defensive replacement any team has ever had. Was sort of the joke, because he had wrist problems, wasn't healthy enough to actually swing the bat, but they would put him in in the eighth inning in left field just on a whim. It was a strange place for someone of that skill level to be.
All right, well, final question. Troy Tulowitzki, does he get traded?
At this point, it looks pretty unlikely. I mean, really, it's looked pretty unlikely the whole time. A lot of us were getting excited about the possibility of giving him to St. Louis for some absurd package. But, I mean, it sounds to me like the Cardinals were keeping the possibility open. They probably had some conference calls about it. And then obviously ultimately they decided to go a different direction, sign Johnny Peralta. And really, they were the only team that was a good match, I think. And I mean, our organization has been saying time and time again, we're not trading them, them being Tulowitzki and Gonzalez, unless we are like totally overwhelmed. I mean, I think they're listening, but I don't think they're going to pull the trigger. And really, I think the reason they would have done it is the reason they traded Fowler. It's to expand their off-season budget so they would have more resources on the free agent market. And I think at this point, they just made that move. So if anything, trading away Fowler makes it a lot less likely that we're going to see Tulowitzki traded, because this isn't really a fire sale mentality. They didn't sell Fowler because they're going to blow up the ship. They're just trying to, you know, mix and match, sort of pull resources out of the field product for the monetary product, and then sort of reassemble it on the other side. It's just sort of a cyclical, very Rockies-esque type of plan that they're going for here. So I don't think this is a precursor to some other giant blockbuster trade, unless somebody comes out of nowhere with something amazing. But I really don't see it. I mean, if the Rockies aren't competitive by, you know, two more seasons from now, I think it's possible, maybe even probable, we start looking into trading these guys, especially if they're still putting up the value that they are right now. But this off season, I don't see it happening.
Does this trade temper what you expect to get back for maybe one of these guys in the future?
I'm not sure what you mean.
Well, like, does this Fowler trade, good or bad, does this kind of change what you, because you said that you expected them to, you know, with the Cardinals and their deep farm system, getting like a big monster, awesome return.
Mm-hmm.
Would this kind of change your view as to what the Rockies could get for like a Tulowitzki or a Gonzalez?
You know, I'm not sure, because I think we're looking at something a little differently here, being that I think the Rockies were looking for an opportunity to trade Fowler, and I think they're looking for reasons not to trade Tulowitzki.
Gotcha.
So I feel like they were probably able to be sort of wooed towards this trade a little bit easier than they would be somebody else. So I think value-wise, I guess you could say they were okay with an underpay to get rid of Fowler, but they need an overpay to get rid of Tulowitzki. I guess that's how I would say that. Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting. I might actually cut out the last question there. Just go ahead and cut that out. That was kind of a dumb question. All right. I don't have any other questions, unless you had something for me.
No, I mean, unless you have any other details to give us about Jordan Lyles or Brandon Barnes. I mean, it sounds like you've given a pretty good breakdown of what we can expect. So
yeah, I mean, Brandon Barnes' ceiling is kind of limited as far as what you're going to get. I think maybe he can improve slightly a little more, especially, I don't want to say in the power, because his power numbers, you look at them, they're not great. But it seems like that was one of the things that developed in the minor leagues, was that as he kind of got accustomed to that level, he kind of developed a little bit more power. And that's kind of why I also say that if he's deployed correctly in that Coors environment, he could have a pretty good year, both offensively and defensively, in a limited role as a role player type of guy.
Which is probably where he'd be. Like, I don't see them handing him a starting position with both Charlie Blackman and Corey Dickerson there. I think his inclusion was definitely the team recognizing that they needed sort of a counterbalance to the lefty side that they provided. So I think that as little confidence as I may have in the front office at this point, they probably see him in sort of that same utility type position, as get the start every 3 or 4 days against the lefty, and let Dickerson or Blackman take on the primary responsibility.
Right. Well, and Lyles, I mean, he's going to be 23 next year, and it sounds like if he turns into a Chatwood, that actually might be a pretty good trade for you guys, as far as he'll be controllable through 2018. And
yep.
You know, he's still relatively inexpensive at this point. And I know it's kind of hard for the Rockies to get pitchers to come to Coors Field now, especially after some of the big free agent signings they've had. And
yeah, on the free agent market, that's definitely true. Although certainly the reputation has changed a little bit since we've had our share of Ubaldo Jimenez's and Julius Chastain's that have proven that it can be done. I mean, even Aaron Cook and Jeff Francis during the latter half of the decade when the Rockies were actually good, they were a big reason why. And so, I mean, it's nice that it cemented this sort of confidence that there's a way a pitcher can thrive in our environment. But that doesn't change that it's a pretty scary prospect for some people. Right. And I mean, it is kind of funny. It's still very much in the public consciousness. I remember when we drafted Jonathan Gray, third overall in the draft, the first question that everybody asked him was, what do you think of pitching in Coors Field?
Right.
And it's just funny how that's the first place. I was actually joking with some of the people in our comment sections about how on whenever anything Rockies related pops up on MLB trade rumors, there's always like the same three or four comments. And it's somebody saying, A, why are the Rockies chasing position players? They obviously need pitching. It's B, why are we trading with the Rockies? We need pitching and they don't have any. It's just sort of this misconception that the Rockies are always going to be looking for more pitchers and never have any pitching. It's just sort of an amusing stereotype, if you will. And I mean, I'm sure the Astros have their own fair share of these that pop up in relationship to whatever they're involved with from people that don't really follow the team that closely.
Well, the biggest thing with Minute Maid Park is that because of 2000, when all the home runs were going out and pitchers were still trying to figure out what to do with the short porch in left field, it kind of has a reputation as an offensive park, but the massive center field and the hill out there that's, 425 feet, it kind of has more of a neutral feel than most other parks. So it came down since then. But yeah, first impressions are everything. And like you said, with Coors Field, when everyone was going nuts and that thing, the humidor is kind of even the playing field a little bit.
Yeah. It's hard to tell. I mean, there's definitely been a physical effect with it, but how much of it is just even the mental aspect of having that protection, right? That just it helps increase a pitcher's confidence compared to the way it used to be. Right. I mean, it's still a real roulette type of situation. I mean, there are a lot of pitchers who come here and just can't handle it. Guthrie is an excellent example. He was not a superstar, but he was a fairly reliable, consistent pitcher that was always putting up, third starter level stuff, always putting up 200 innings, came here and just completely fell apart. And so it does happen. We need to be very shrewd in how carefully we pick the pitchers that come here. I mean, another example is when we traded Seth Smith to Oakland. We got Guillermo Moscoso in return, who, didn't have much of an MLB resume yet, but at the same time was viewed by a lot of us as a disaster waiting to happen because he was a fly ball guy. And lo and behold, he didn't really do much. And then we sent him off as well. So, I mean, really, when it comes to trying to project what Lyles can do, there's just so many factors in terms of figuring how he's going to react to just pitching in the environment to begin with, but also how he's going to adapt to changing his pitching philosophy and all that sort of stuff. So, I mean, it is possible that these guys work out and become good role players for us. That would be nice if it happened, but I understand that a lot of the fan base right now doesn't have a great deal of confidence in that happening.
Right. No, I hear you. And, as I said, you look at their season so far to this point, and it doesn't look very good. But, sometimes you just never know how these deals play out. I did find one more question. What's up with the Daddy Long Legs as a nickname for Dexter Fowler? Is that something that you guys use, or?
It is, but I've never really understood the context either, other than maybe he has really long legs, which he does.
it's on his baseball reference page, so I had to ask.
I love those nicknames too. I remember on one of our podcasts a couple of years ago, we spent a good 20 minutes talking about how Bronson Arroyo's nickname on Baseball Reference is Saturn Nuts, which amuses me to no end. I'm a huge fan of Bronson Arroyo. He's like my guilty pleasure player.
Yes.
I really, really don't want the Rockies to sign him, but I still sort of imagine how, even if they did, I would be happy. even though I really wouldn't, I would.
You'd probably be the only guy, yeah. Yeah. All right. I think that answered all my questions, and hopefully sufficiently answered any of your questions. Greg, I thank you for your time, and I guess good luck for the rest of the offseason.
Yeah, I'm glad we were able to work this out, and it's always a lot of fun to talk to you about all of these strange little things that keep happening between our two teams.
So. Yeah, well, this has almost become an annual to sometimes a biannual event for us. I did check the schedule before we hopped on to see if we were playing each other next year.
Not this year.
Apparently, we're not rivals again this year, but we were rivals last year, so go figure.
This year we get the Rangers.
Well, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I have to say I had a lot. I preferred playing the Astros for those four games.
Yeah, I'm sure you did.
Well, although with all those first overall draft picks you're getting, who knows? Yeah. A couple of years from now, could look a lot different.
Yeah. Well, you know, that was our payment. That was part of our payment for Dexter Fowler. We were going to give you part of a four-game series.
Yeah, there you go. One free win in our next season. Yeah.
This was in the works a long time ago.